Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number one on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.uslicom, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the follow button. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, one of the founding members of ULU. Tonight's topic is Liberated Minds, Building Liberated Communities. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
Yes, peace, sis. I'm doing well. Glad to be back with the family. Like we always say, these Thursdays roll around so quick. I'm doing well and looking forward to some exciting information about community building this evening.
Okay, good. We're looking forward to having you and Brother Ty share the information that you have. So where would you like to begin tonight's conversation? Baba Hakima. Brother Ty is on the line, and his line is open.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, just in general, we take the opportunities each third Thursday to bring the membership and the general community information about progress being made at Us Lifting Us. As most of us know, we are involved in a bold change of our structure, which is going to increase our capacity to do some very important things in our local community. And the other thing that we do on Third Thursdays is try and bring community empowerment programs, initiatives, models, individuals involved in that work to the family, so that we get a glimpse of some of the things that we can tap into. A lot of times we think we have to build everything from scratch on our own, but that's not necessarily the truth. There's a saying in our local community that almost anything that you can think of that needs to be done, somebody is probably already attempting to do it. And you just simply got to reach out and find those jewels in the community and join with them and help build. So this evening, we are joined with Brother Ty Simmons out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we're going to involve him and us in a lively discussion around food. A friend of mine says that the first culture is agriculture, and so I think Brother Ty would agree with that. Brother Ty, let us hear your voice.
Greetings, family. Can you hear me?
We can hear you well.
Yes, we can hear you very well.
Greetings. How are you, everyone, doing?
Yeah, we're doing well, man. Glad you could join us. And there are two initiatives that you're involved in, and we're going to talk about those in a little bit. But give the family some feel for who Ty is and maybe some indication of your vision for our community around food. So give us an introduction and a little background in terms of who you are.
All right. My name is Ty Simmons. I'm a father, educator, farmer, consultant. I graduated from San Francisco State with a double bachelor's and a triple associate's degrees with emphasis in ancient civilizations. I'm co-founder of the non-for-profit Human Agricultural Cooperative. I'm co-founder of the Family and Friends, a diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting business. And I'm also co-founder of Utopian Community Grocery, a black and community-owned grocery store model.
I say. So how'd you get to Fort Wayne, Indiana?
I'm born and raised here in Fort Wayne. Graduated from Southside High School and then went to play basketball at San Francisco State.
Okay. So now you're back and got your fingers in the dirt, so to speak.
Yes.
Good enough. What would you say is your vision long-term for the black community related to food or food security in any way that you would put it around one of our basic needs as food? So what's your long-term vision?
Well, as you said earlier, I mean, anything that we're trying to do has already been done. So I'm a Garveyite. I follow Marcus Garvey, some of the, you know, Delaney, Frederick Douglass, and basically some, and O.W. Gurley, Tulsa, Oklahoma. I follow their model, create a black community with farming to feed our community so we can create and be sustainable with anything that we do.
Okay.
Our long-term vision is to create our own communities, like in the early 1900s, where we have our own farms, our own, you know, lawyers, doctors, our own communities, basically away in this country, but away from this country.
Away from it in terms of process, in terms of how we approach a civilization building, I guess you would say.
Of course, education, how we work with each other, how we feed ourselves, how we heal, how we love God. I mean, just away from more of the quote unquote worldly things that we are going through.
I say. So, when was your entry into growing food?
Well, actually, I graduated in sociology and criminal justice. I was going to be an attorney. But what happened was, no matter how far you become in the legal field, either you're going to play ball still or you're going to basically be ran out of it. So I wasn't the type of person to play ball. So I worked in the corporate world for years, and I made, you know, these corporate people millions of dollars. And they wouldn't even give me $50,000 in the early 2000s. So what I did was I had decided to make that entrepreneurial journey and told myself I would never work for anyone long-term again. And the first thing when you come up with that idea is, how am I going to feed my family? So I started reaching out to, you know, my mentors and said, hey, I need to, you know, learn how to farm. So first and foremost, I can feed me and my family so we can survive in this jungle no matter what. So I began the journey. And within the first few months, we started an organization called Human Agriculture Cooperative. Human Agriculture Cooperative's mission is to educate, train, and mentor our youth and community members in farming, food distribution, and vocational training. And what happened was, it was a synergy from a lot of our people wanting to learn about, you know, growing food. And I was a novice. So basically what we did was I took from my mentors, brought my mentors, and we trained our own certified black farmers the first few years. And then now we're in year 8, and we've secured over – and well, we've grown, secured, and distributed over 3 million pounds of food in the Midwest for free. We've worked with, you know, Trump administration to, you know, to distribute millions of pounds of food. We work with Michelle Obama's organization to distribute 1,000 pounds of food. And I only mention Trump administration because when the black leaders in my city, when the mayor in our city, when the governor wasn't providing food for the underserved communities, the CARES program came with millions of pounds of food. So, I mean, I'm thankful because at that moment, right before the pandemic, our people were still struggling. And then in the middle of the pandemic, I mean, the cost of food, I mean, the availability of food. But when we had, you know, 52 footers coming in and providing that nutritional food where I'm expecting it from the beginning to our community, it was a blessing. So what happened was we end up basically becoming one of the largest food distribution organizations in Indiana, behind the food banks. And now today, we co-wrote one of the largest black farmer bills in Indiana. Black farmers are going to administer the bill. We're going to distribute the food. We're going to grow the food, and then we're going to basically, our farmers are going to be able to get paid wholesale to distribute food to our community for free. The same thing I've been doing for the last 8 years, now we have funding for. But that's only a piece of it. That's only a piece of it because when you get these large grants, they don't give you money for infrastructure. They don't give you money for operational costs. So our whole campaign right now is called Share the Harvest Campaign. And what that is we're going to teach communities how to grow their own food, how to distribute their food, either by donation or for profit or for non-profit, no matter how they do it. Because what we've created is a seed bank to grocery store model. And I'll stop right there because I know I've been going through it and it's a lot of information. So I want to give time to reflect on some of the things I've said.
Well, when you say seed bank to grocery store model, how long have you been thinking through the model? And then we're gonna want to understand the details of the model, because Us Lifting Us will develop and or tap into models that has to do with food. And certainly if you have or if you do perfect a model that works for communities in general, we're going to want to not only know about that, but we're going to find ways to participate. But seed banks to grocery store model, how long is that on your heart? And just give us an overview of what you're saying in those few words.
Okay. Let's just start with the history of it. You know, Marcus Garvey, UNIA, created the Liberty Farms, which was basically outside of every black community, they basically created farms. That farm would basically feed into our black communities, providing nutritional, healthy food at economic cost by us, for us, right? So basically that ensured, you know, the livelihood of hundreds of farmers and around thousands of farmers throughout the United States. So we didn't create most of it. What we did was basically emulate the model of Liberty Farms. And basically what we have to do is, since we have so many GMO products, we have to create a seed bank for heirloom seeds. Because I tell people all the time, if it doesn't have a seed in it, God didn't make it. Okay, so if we don't control our seeds, eventually we'll have to go to Monsanto and Bayer to basically get their seed for the non-GMO, which they've been researching for the last almost 100 years. So basically, and they've been doing that research to basically create products that, one, don't have seeds, have high sugar, have high salt, and look pretty. Okay, none of those things are good for us. Okay, because what that does is it creates a different genetic strand that basically becomes resistant to fertilizers, you know, some bugs and stuff like that. Yeah. So the next part of seed banking is the farming and food distribution program. We have to create more farmers if we're going to create more food. Indiana is a 90, even though most people know Indiana is a farming community, but we import 90% of the food. So when the pandemic hit, I mean, our shelves were crazy, probably just like everyone else's, because what happens is most of the food that we eat, no matter where you are, comes from California and Texas and Florida. Okay? So during the winter, during a pandemic, if they struggle, we all struggle. So our model is basically to train more farmers, involve more people, because a farmer needs everyone. A farmer needs a healer, farmer needs a doctor, farmer needs a lawyer, farmer needs a truck driver, farmer needs radio broadcasters, farmer needs advisors and ministers. Every career field is related to a farmer. So no matter what place you are in your life, we need you. Okay? The food distribution part is, one, you can do it non-for-profit, or you can do a for-profit. We do both because we know we need a sustainable model where eventually I don't have to write 100 grants, where I don't have to ask someone to give us the money, where we can create, like right now, we're at a point right now where we went from a 90-10, which is we gave away 90% of our produce and basically only sold 10. The last 2 years we've been ramping up because we figured out that sometimes they're going to give us the money, sometimes they're not. So basically we went from a 90-10 to a 60-40. So this year we'll give away 60% and sell 40%, and that'll be enough money to sustain us for another 2 years. But it also gives us money for a down payment for our own 130 acres, about 20 miles from here. We have a group that I can't tell much more than that. We have a group working on purchasing 130 acres with our own ponds, about 80 acres of farmland, so we can create our own safe haven within this country. The last part of it is the retail part of it. So you can do retail and basically farmers market, grocery store, sell the restaurants, all that. But all that has to come from the farming part, because what that does is it cuts out three or four middlemen. Okay. If I'm getting food directly from not only my farm, but other farmers, I mean, it cuts out about four or five hands. Let's just say that. Okay. So I'm basically, the only other cost that I have is transportation. And we have that too. We have small box trucks. We have a 26-foot refrigerated truck. And we are working with a deal with a trucking company to have 52 footers where we can create a larger network. So within this 8 years, what we've done is we've created a network of black farmers, about 300 black farmers in America and about 200 white farmers. Each one of these farmers give me food wholesale minus cost. And what I mean, minus about 10 to 20%. And what that does is, because I gave these men and these women a solution to how to basically curb. I can't never say stop food deserts. I can never say stop hungry individuals. But what I can say is, doing that, I went to these farmers and talked to them and said, hey, this is not about money. Okay, it's people over profits over here. Okay, our whole thing is if we can negotiate a good price where you're still being paid a fair market value, because I'm a farmer, I know real fair market value, and you can make money and still survive, give me whatever you have left over. Give me some of your seconds. Give me some of your thirds. Because what I'll do with those seconds and thirds is I'll give them away. We'll donate them. And that what that does, it curbs all of the food desert and food access. So the last part, again, like I said, farmers market and retail. Okay, the grocery store model, black, community owned, and basically for the people, by the people. And don't get me wrong, we'll sell our produce to anyone because we are still living in a capitalistic world. Okay, right. But you must have your community support. You must have other people's support, because unfortunately, I've seen throughout history and heard throughout history, unfortunately, we don't support each other as much as we should. So if you're not looking for alternative sources of income, you'll be behind the ball all the time. So that's where we're at right now. We are the grocery store. It's called Utopian Community Grocery Store. Right now, we have about 6 deaths in our family in the last 18 months. So we just took a step back and start doing more, wholesale, less public, because we're not open to the public right now. Reason being is because it basically allows us to maneuver and move a little bit more and to actually help more communities, because we don't have all the overhead.
I see. But as you and I have talked, in Ulu, we're focused on building Ulu chapters in local communities around the country. We call them UBCs, Ulu-based communities. And in many of these communities, we're going to need to look at food, probably from a retail perspective. In some cases, there may be opportunities for community gardening and tapping into the farmers outside of the cities, or I don't know how that's going to be. But your model, and you've at least experimented with it, the grocery store model, and you have some sense of how Hulu and our local community groups and other community groups might benefit from your model. So in terms of seed banks to grocery stores, let's talk a little bit more about your grocery store model and how you feed into that. Now, is this a large marketplace, relatively small marketplace? And let's talk about the size and maybe what a local community, what Hulu local communities might need to think of in terms of financing these kinds of operations. And we'll talk about the supply line as we go. But so it's Utopian. What's the name of it? Utopian?
Utopian Community Grocery.
Okay.
And so what we're doing is we're getting ready to launch Utopian Community Grocery franchises. And what we're seeking to start chapters with different organizations or franchises is basically we are going to basically partner with you. We're going to provide our network. We're going to come in and train you. But what we ask you for you to do is basically, and what that's going to cost with that network and helping you with the next 2 years is only about $25,000 to $40,000, depending on how much time that we're there. But we ask for every franchise, and which is about half of franchises for, you know, a mom and pop store, or you know, you're looking at $150,000 to $200,000 for a Safeway, or a Save a Lot, or something like that. So we're looking at small, like Dollar General, you know, size, about 5,000 square feet. You'll basically have about $40,000 to $50,000 in merchandise. So right there, you're looking at let's just say sixty-five to eighty-five thousand initial investment. But that basically it covers your franchising, your training, and your inventory. So you find a spot that you have about 5,000 square foot. We'll come in. We'll help you with designing, merchandising, everything. Get you ready to go. We'll help train your staff, and basically we'll provide our entire network to you. The same price that I'm getting, your store will get as well. And basically only thing that we charge is transportation. There's no other fees, no other thing like that. Because I'll say it again, our model is people over profit, okay? So what will happen is when you buy your franchise, I'll teach you is you can go not-for-profit or go profit. I won't get into the details of all that because that's some of the secret sauce, and basically that's the intellectual property part of it. But what I will say is we're working with a group of black people in Indianapolis, a group of us in Chicago, to basically they might have their own model, but actually they want us to supplement and help them with the food costs. And help them with bring in food and help them with our network. That we can help with all that. And only reason that we actually charge a cost is because I live in Fort Wayne. I'm gonna have to fly out there. I'm gonna have to bring my team out there. We're gonna train you and we're gonna get you ready. And the most important part of it is our intellectual property. You're gonna get our network of 500 farmers. You're gonna get our network of suppliers. You're going to get everything because as of right now, if you said, Ty, I want South African lobster tails, which are the most expensive lobsters in the world, I can get that. If you want collard greens in the middle of the summer where they don't grow in, you know, I can get that. The grocery store model along with the farming model allows me to source food all year round. And that's a part of the secret sauce.
I say, and what would you suggest a community in terms of the range need to be prepared on a monthly basis to run their operations and to restock and to continue being available to the community.
Well, we had a small model. It was, like I said, 5,000 square foot. To run it 5 days a week cost us about $8,000 a month, right? We brought in about $25,000 a month. But we would reinvest it. And that's basically, we would put it right back into buying more dry goods, buying more other supplies, uplifting our website, because it's a constant investment. We all know most businesses don't survive the first year, okay? So what we did was we made sure that we had our supply chain, no matter if the door closes or what. Like, I sell thousands of pounds of food at the farmer's market. I sell thousands of pounds of food online. So no matter what, even if you say you have to take a break or only go down to 4 days, I can still teach you a model where you can still make money no matter what.
Sister Q, any thoughts or any questions that you might have for Ty?
Yes, I did have a question regarding the what he was saying about the distribution of online. He has a website, I think. Was that what you said, that you do sell food online?
Yes, ma'am. Utopia, UTGFortWayne.com. And I'll announce this, I just snagged a contract with DoorDash that will allow us to distribute food, you know, in probably much like 40 cities.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
What's the web address again?
UCG Fort Wayne, FortWayne.com.
Okay. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Now, you also have a nonprofit, and let us get a little bit more information about that as well.
Human Agriculture Cooperative is our non-for-profit, Human Agricultural Co-op, COOP, .org. And our mission is to educate, train, and mentor our youth and community members in food distribution and vocational training. And so we started our youth program and basically started teaching and training our young people about farming, about community activism, racial diversity, equity, and basically creating a whole person just teaching them how to survive, teach them about patience, teach them about discipline, and putting their hands in the dirt and, you know, really getting that feel of, you know, Mother Nature. And basically, over the time, what we've done is we've written grants to basically provide food for our community, to grow food for our community, to source food from other states for our community, which has allowed us to, like I said, work with presidents, former first lady, a couple billionaires, and basically provide food in Fort Wayne, Indianapolis, Evansville, St. Louis, Cleveland, Hammond, Gary, and Chicago. And our goal is to duplicate it as many times as we can, because the process is basically creating people that we can trust and creating people who want to actually do the work, and creating individuals that kind of go with our model. One of our models is together we're better and stronger. And every time, it's proven itself over and over. And, I mean, people from all walks of life basically working together for the common good. And what we've come to right now is we've secured $800,000 of the $1.48 million. We'll get the other $680,000 by the end of the year. But that's only for administration and food procurement. Our next part of our journey is Share the Harvest. And I mentioned it earlier. And basically what Share the Harvest is a $1 a day pledge from 2,800 people in 1 year. What that would generate is $1 million. And what we would do with that $1 million is use all our resources to provide that community with 1 million pounds of food. People say, Ty, well, $1 million, 1 million pounds of food. I mean, where is the money going? How do? And I say, we have contracts with farmers that will help us reach our 1 million pounds of food with only spending about $200,000. And people say, wow, that is incredible, because they believe in the mission. They believe in Ty. They believe in Human Agriculture Cooperative, because we've shown time and time again that we can take a dollar and feed five people, okay? Because the whole thing about it is working with the farmers. I mean, again, I mean, we all need water and food, okay? The farmer is going to tap into the water and grow food. So if you're not working with a farmer and you're trying to build a sustainable community, I mean, you're already losing. You're already losing. Okay.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is the Share the Harvest campaign is, with that other $800,000, we're going to purchase land. We're going to purchase more equipment. We're going to build a vocational training school, because we know, as I said earlier, we know farmers need everybody. I need electricians. I need carpenters. I need roofers. I need drone operators. I need, you know, everything. Because what is that going to do? That's going to provide a better niche of individuals. If you're an electrician, you're an electrician that still needs to eat. So, hey, why don't you do some of your work for some of our food, and I'll pay you a reasonable salary as well, because we want you to share the harvest, because we know having better food, you're going to live longer. You're going to be happier. You don't have to struggle and worry when you know you're getting food at wholesale cost. You don't have to worry about going and, you know, and being upcharged 200% at Walmart, at Kroger, or whatever your local grocery store is. And you might know the farmer.
And it's good food, huh?
Of course. It's non-GMO. Non-GMO. I can't say organic because I don't have the certification, but our the way we grow food is organic. I can say, legally, I can say my food is natural, because we don't use any chemical fertilizers. We don't use any, you know, chemical byproducts. I mean, you know, we do it right. You know, we check our soil every year. We make, you know, I teach people from the beginning, you know, check your soil, check, you know, get your farmer number. I mean, we teach from, you know, from alpha to omega of farming in this new era, you know, with conventional ways and new technology.
Back to your supply network to the grocery store. So you're talking about more than produce, is that correct?
Oh, yes. We can get produce, meat, I mean, household items, cleaning supplies, I mean, toilet paper. I mean, one of my friends is, you know, the owner of Freedom Paper Company, all black-owned toilet paper company, you know, Mr. Brother Muhammad. You know,
yeah,
there's other companies
as well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, so pretty much everything I do, I try to get it from us first. If we can't source it from us, then we go get it from them, and I basically make sure they're going to give us the best price, because most people don't understand. A lot of times, you might have more money than me, but the power of negotiation that I have within myself, my buying power is equivalent to a save a lot right now, but I don't have the capital of a save a lot. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I buy I get my produce for cheaper than Save-A-Lot. I get my produce cheaper than Kroger, because the whole thing about it is most of the farmers in America don't work with those guys.
Mm-hmm. I got you. So in terms of margin, because you work with a collective, and as you grow and as you build with the value that you have, so the stores, the grocery stores that you help to incubate will be competitive, not like if you started a small grocery store on your own and you were at the mercy of the wholesaler and you were just buying for yourself. Your system and your model allows that store to be more competitive in terms of the price that store pays, not only for produce, but for the other commodities that would end up on the shelf. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And also a better quality produce. What I've learned over the years is grocery stores work on the geo-marketing model. And basically what that is, they bring us number two tomatoes. Let's use tomatoes as an example. They bring us number two on the South Side or black community, right? But they charge us the same amount that they charge white people in their communities for number ones. They charge the poor people the most money for the worst quality of food. And basically what we have, we've been challenging that but you can't do anything about it. They have us captive. We're captive consumers because we don't own anything. We don't own our own grocery store. So who do we have to go to? We have to go to them. So basically we're at their mercy. So basically, again, they give us the worst product for the most money. The model that we have, we give you the best product for the least amount of money.
What would you say is your range in terms of how far out from Fort Wayne can you support a grocery store? And are you looking to be in a position that you could support a store any place in the country?
That would be our ultimate model. Right now, I have a majority of our farmers are Florida, and I'll say Florida, Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, right? But those are the ones. I mean, that's what I could do right now. It's just a handful of us, but. I'm not going to keep saying, I don't try to say when we train more individuals with this franchise model, it's definitely going to be a national model. Because if you look at pretty much every South Side and every major city, it's us. It's systemic. They didn't do this on accident. This was planned. So when you look at the South Side of Chicago, the South Side of Detroit, the South Side of Fort Wayne, the bottoms in Atlanta, I mean, you can go, you know, in Oakland, it's the East Side, and you know, but pretty much it's one side or another. They redlined us in that side. So basically what we're doing is we're breaking the mold for us.
So you wouldn't have a problem, let's say, if we – bought into your franchise model in Atlanta or in Richmond or D.C. or Charleston, so anywhere in the southeast or east of the Mississippi, we're pretty much within the range.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Good. Let us give us your web addresses again. And the name of each, you mentioned three components.
Mm-hmm.
Name them again and give us how we can gain more information. And by the way, we're going to send this recording out as a podcast, because not all of our members will have chimed in this evening, and we'll record it, well, it's already been recorded, and then we'll get it back out to them, and they'll do their research. And some of them will probably contact you on their own, because we have members throughout the country, not a lot, but scattered, a few members in Canada, Europe, East Africa, West Africa, South Africa, the Caribbean, Central America. So we try and make sure that our membership is kept in the loop. But so I'm just saying, in addition to those of us on the call and listening this evening, others will be listening in the coming days, weeks. And all of them are archived, so you may have people coming back, you know, weeks or months after the broadcast and just going through them and reviewing them. And we definitely want them to be able to take a closer look at your model. And so if you would repeat the names of your programs and models and give us again the information to get additional information.
No problem. Our not-for-profit is Human Agricultural Cooperative. Our email, email is humanagriculturalcoop, COOP, at gmail.com. Our website is humanagriculturalcoop, COOP, .org. The grocery store model is Utopian Community Grocery. The website is email is UCG Fort Wayne, FORTWAYNE, at gmail.com. Our website is UCGFortWayne.com. The third final component is our diversity, equity, inclusion consulting business, which I'm co-founder of. It's called the Family and Friends Fund. And what that was, it is a racial equity and inclusion consulting business that basically started as a program to basically fundraise to provide funding for BIPOC, Black and IPOC business owners, programs, and organizations. We weren't being funded by the powers that be. Within less than a year and a half, we fundraised over $250,000, and gave it away. Our whole model, I don't get paid for it. Our board don't get paid for it. Our entire model is to invest 100% of the money that we fundraise, that we create, that we secure, to right back into our community, because we know if we don't do it, it won't happen at the rate or at the right time as needed.
Exactly.
The organization is Family and Friends Fund, and it's familyandfriendsfund.org.
All right. Any question, Sister Q, any additional
questions? We have a hand up, Brother.
Okay.
Baba Hakima, we have a hand up, so I'm going to open the line for this call. Caller with the last four digits, 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question, or make your comment. Thank you.
Yeah, greetings, Sister Q, welcome guests, and Baba Hakima. This is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida, and came on a little bit late, but enough to really appreciate the information that the brother is sharing with us. And this may seem like an unfair question, but I have to ring it because of information that I received. I noticed that you're operating in the Midwest, and do you have any intention to expand into the southern states, the Black Belt area? And the reason I ask that question is because some associates of mine were debating me that the soil has been severely damaged because of the fertilizing use during the times, you know, of the Jim Crow era, you know, and during that period of time when it was used heavily, and the soil has damaged. And to utilize that soil, for farmers to try to utilize that soil would not be very productive. Do you have any info on that, or to rebut or maybe confirm at least a bit of information that was shared with me?
Well, I would say any farmer is basically going to regenerate their soil in a multiple ways. They're going to either provide different, you know, more phosphorus, more nitrogen, you know, more fertilizer, you know, more manure, however you want to call it. You can always manipulate the soil to actually what you need. And that's really what you have to do is you have to test it. A lot of our farmers don't test their soil because my granddaddy farmed on this, my great-granddaddy farmed on this. But if they're not doing cover crops, they're not rotating their crops, of course you're going to deplete a lot of the nutrients, a lot of the minerals that you need in it. But there's so many ways that you can put it back into the soil.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. So that arms me a little bit when I go back and confront them. Thanks a lot for answering the question.
Yeah, and,
no worries.
Thank you for the question.
Yeah. Now, Brother Ty, we're going to need to cross-pollinate and stay close to you as we develop these local UBCs. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, our theme is Liberated Minds Building Liberated Communities. And, of course, we couldn't even begin to think of building these communities without a realistic and hefty concern about food. Our expertise is going to be in the area of aggregating the resources necessary for a building and sustaining community, knowledge, labor, and capital. And one of the unique features about our approach is investment clubs. And certainly we're going to want to heavily invest in our ability to feed ourselves. Our model is essentially a for-profit model, and but not exploitative. And we're looking at creating jobs, well-paying jobs, and providing needed goods and services for the community, of course, food, and stimulating the economic life and livelihood of the local community. And so we look forward to establishing an ongoing relationship and look forward to you teaching us and our members who love to stick their fingers in the dirt, some of which are farmers and small farmers. And so we appreciate you coming on Dare to Win, and we're nearing the end, but let's make sure that you have said everything to us that you needed to in the way of introduction. We know that we're going to have to dive into the information that you have online and possibly speak with you at other times to get additional information. But we definitely want to be in the mode of looking at the grocery store model, in particular for those communities where there is a pressing need. And there probably is a pressing need in every place, especially good quality food. So is there anything that you maybe haven't mentioned that or you need to go over before we close the show?
First and foremost, again, I want to say thank you all for your time, your acknowledgement, and the opportunity to put out some information. Just know, like you just said, there's thousands of Black communities around the country that are basically are being controlled by our food, by access to food, by land usage. And basically what we're doing is utilizing what our ancestors have given us to create a more segregated community. And the reason being is because, unfortunately, yes, they have been people around within the last 50, 60 years since integration that have survived and have thrived. But the whole thing about the whole of our community, we have not. And until we get to the part where we're working with each other, where we're bartering with each other, where we're guiding and mentoring and sacrificing for not only ourselves and our children and our next generation, I believe we're going to still remain in this situation. And your organization, as among others, by building each other up, by helping each other, is the only way that's going to allow us to make real change. I tell people all the time, the only cure to hunger and food deserts is basically farming. And so if you don't have a farmer near you, or if you have a farmer near you, get closer to them. Start talking to them. Start working with them. Start working with her and start creating your own model without me. Because by the time I get to you, you should have most of the work done and already set up.
Ashe. Sister Q? Any announcements?
No, I have no announcements. And we have no more questions, no more hands up.
Okay. Well, I do want to make an announcement, if I can. You know, most of the family know that we're heavily involved here in the Atlanta metropolitan area in developing a local chapter as a prototype for duplication in other cities. We've done quite a bit of work around that. For members listening this evening who are based in Atlanta, anywhere in the Atlanta metropolitan area, if I haven't reached out to you already, please reach back out to me. You can use the phone number on the website and just indicate that you're interested in participating in the Atlanta local UBC. And there's a good bit of information that is already been developed, and there is additional information still to be developed. So there's a good working group, and in the coming few days, we will send out an invitation for the Atlanta members to come together face-to-face, and we'll do face-to-face and virtual. So if you're really not able to come to the face-to-face session, you can chime in virtually. We have more than 150 members here in Atlanta. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not 200, but I know we have at least 150. And so this is a very exciting time because most of us know the importance of being in community. And you know, there's so many things that develop from a prototype, a design, a model of building community. And so that's our specialty, is not agriculture in the sense of growing food, but in terms of bringing online liberated communities with that economic development component. That's our wheelhouse. And so We'll be doing that and duplicating them in other cities. So for the listening audience, in particular for those of us in the Atlanta metropolitan areas, get ready to receive an invitation to have this first organizing session around the local chapter. You know, for the listening audience, we have pretty much functioned. We got started in 2013, so we're a little right at 10 years old. And as a matter of fact, in June, we'll be 10 years old. And so we function as a whole with individuals globally, and we talked about building community around those individuals, but we never did it. We still kind of focus from the center, but now we have restructured, and the power source and power element of ULU will be the locals, the local ULU chapters. And so we look forward to, in the coming years, having hundreds, if not thousands, of local chapters. And Brother Ty, you know, we'll need a grocery store in a good many of those. And as we grow and as you grow, this might very well be a partnership that we appreciate and empower and pass to future generations. So thank you for being available, and just know that we're going to stay in contact, and because it's the same work. It's the same work. Sister Q, back over to you.
Okay. Thank you for that, Baba Hakima. And thank you, Brother Ty, for the information you shared with us tonight. We want to thank everyone that joined us for this evening, and we invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. And remember, after a storm, we do not invite the storm to come back and help clean up. We'll say peace.
Take care. Peace, family.
Peace.
Peace.